Welcome to the Hold for Further Study show. Here is your host, Robert Paquin.
Thanks for tuning in to the Hold for Further Study show. I am your host, Robert Paquin. Today's show, we're going to talk about the recent presidential debate, the last one before the election. We'll talk about a little bit of Rhode Island politics, some housekeeping, and I am extremely excited to have Kendra Anderson as my guest today. She's a candidate for state senate in Warwick, and she had a four-way primary. That's about as interesting as it gets. I look forward to hearing from her about how that all went down. As a matter of fact, I think Anchor's getting really popular in Rhode Island, as I heard the same music for my intro on another podcast for the state. But really, check out anchor.fm. It's absolutely the best way to launch and manage your podcast. In my opinion, Warwick has to be the number one, maybe number two hotbed for politics in a very broad sense in the state. You know, Providence being in that conversation, of course. Cranston, you know, under Mayor Fung for so long, it hasn't had any real political upheaval. I would say Barbara Fenton Fung and Mattiello race is probably the craziest thing to come out of Cranston in some time. But I did grow up in Warwick, and somewhere around the year 2000 started to get very interested in local politics and had learned about who the players were and what was at stake. And Kendra Anderson ran in a four-way primary this year for a Senate seat in Warwick. I can't think of anything more excited than a four-way primary. We had something similar in 2000 with the special election. And, you know, it's just very interesting to see all these groups of people come out. They're the same party. They identify in many of the same ways, but yet they all have a different approach or even a different reason in some cases as to why they are running. I had a chance to sit down with Kendra a couple weeks ago and talk about her thoughts after the primary, and I think you're going to really like this interview.
Joining us today is Kendra Anderson. Kendra is running for Rhode Island State Senate in District 31. Kendra, how are you doing today?
I am very well, thank you.
I'm so happy to have you on the show. I grew up in Warwick, so I guess there's a bit of an affinity in my mind to your candidacy. Can you tell me about a little bit about your neighborhood and what's been going on in Warwick politics, which I know is always interesting, and kind of what pushed you into this race as a result of that?
Sure. Thank you so much for having me today. Well, I live in the Norwood neighborhood, that section of District 31, and I joined very early on the when I moved here about 6 years ago, the Norwood Neighborhood Association, and I'm on the leadership team at this time. And we've just been a great community organization, and that got me interested in Warwick politics. And from there, I actually have been working on climate change issues in and as a resident at the State House, trying to push policy along to get some meaningful legislation written. And it just wasn't happening. So I decided to take the next step and actually run for the Senate so I could have perhaps some impact on creating meaningful environmental legislation.
So, you know, with climate change and renewable energy as such being so important to you, what do you think that legislation could be? What do you think you could do with that power in the Senate to address those agendas?
Well, there have been several bills that have been proposed and sponsored that seem to never make it out of committee. And those are, you know, smaller bills like the plastic bag ban, PFAS, which is the chemical that's put into or actually leaches into water from certain products that is highly, highly poisonous to human beings, a ban on that in packaging material. the plastic straw bill, and then on a higher scale or larger, more all-encompassing, would be, you know, emissions reduction legislation. The Act on Climate, which sets targets for emissions reduction. And what's great about these bills is that they're not done in isolation. There are others, you know, our neighboring states, Massachusetts and Connecticut, that are also considering this kind of legislation. And we're sort of dependent on each other to get these things passed. And so that we can do regional work. And that's exciting. We just have to have the political will to get these bills to the floor and debated and then voted on, but they never make it to the floor.
Do you think if they have the ability to get through, whether that means a change of pace from what we're used to seeing with the speaker or potentially his defeat by Barbara Fenton Fung, do you expect, outside of that kind of gray area of how things may happen, do you expect more liberal Kennedy kind of Democrats to get on board with a lot of the climate change legislation that you'd be looking at? Or do you think you'd have to kind of reach out to the smaller Republican caucus and see if there's some, you know, horse trading or something that can go on to make sure that, like, people that are like yourself, members of the political co-op and whatnot, they have some, you know, not an agenda, but certain ideas that are a little bit more left than your traditional Rhode Island Democrat. So I'm curious about how you feel the public will accept some of that stuff. And for me, I speak personally when I ask that, just, you know, casually speaking, because after I left the GOP and kind of took the blinders off, there were a lot of things that the Democratic Party offered on its platform that I was totally in sync with. But there's also still a lot that I associate with the GOP, smaller government, pro-guns, you know, what have you. So how do you see this next chamber coming up with the House and the Speaker and everything that's going on there, and then you in the Senate and the way, you know, it's organized in that House?
Well, you bring up a great point that this is going to have to probably include Republican support. The great thing is that clean water, clean air, a sustainable climate, there's no political face on that. There's no, you don't have to be a Democrat or a Republican specifically to support that. It's not like far left policy or far right policy. This is just to benefit humankind. So I think, yes, that talking to Republicans, and I think there are many Democrats in the State House right now that want to work on this so badly, that are just so enthusiastic about working on meaningful environmental legislation. So I think it's not a heavy lift if we can just distance ourselves from the influence of fossil fuel money. That's getting in the way each time. So yeah, I think there can be a lot of reaching across the aisle on this.
That's great to hear. And I will remind anybody listening, when it comes to emissions, that your car would be faster off the line if you had a hybrid. So if anybody's listening out there and they're not sure if they want to get in on lowering emissions or the acceptable number, you know, parts per million in the air, just remember that an electric battery will make your car faster in a drag race. So that's what I always like to tell anyone who's, you know, against making any changes to such things. I did read an interesting story. I think I read it on your website, was you working with your mom actually for women's rights in the past. I would love if you could just tell that, you know, that story and what you guys did, because it sounds just so wonderful. I mean, yes, I'm a male, but I'm a pro-choice guy, and I couldn't imagine, like, working with my dad on, you know, some kind of thing, or my mom. It just sounds wonderful, so I'd like to hear that story.
Well, I have to say it is wonderful, and it's something that I treasure from my past, is that I had parents who really did care about what was happening in the world and cared about people and cared about social equity and equality. And I grew up that way. And my mom was more of the activist, my father a little more of a educator. But we actually, I do remember going to peace rallies with my mom and social, racial justice rallies and events with her. And I literally, that story of holding her hand is so clear in my mind. So it just was instilled in me as a very young child and my brother and sister as well. So, yeah, and she continues today at 85 to be the same way. She is out, believe it or not, canvassing for me.
Oh, that's wonderful.
In these hot days, I couldn't keep her back. No, I'm going, she said. She was out there canvassing, and she's still working for positive change, which I'm so proud of that. So proud to see her do that, and feel so lucky that this was my upbringing.
Yeah, I wonder at her age. I mean, it's difficult for anybody, even regardless of whether they're a conservative or liberal judge. But the passing of Justice Ginsburg, if she's 85, lines up with a lot of her lifetime. And I can only imagine that must have really, really been a punch to the gut, knowing that certainly somebody she's probably not going to support will take that seat.
Yeah, and I didn't answer your question about our work on women's rights. We also, I was older by then when I first was standing up for Roe versus Wade and then the ERA. I was in my late teens into my early 20s, and she definitely showed me the way there too. And when I was endorsed by Planned Parenthood, she cried. She cried, and it just went full circle. Gets me emotional too.
No, that, it's like a realization. It's wonderful.
Yeah, that, wow, look at where we are. And that was prior to, Ginsburg's death, but still just that all has been tying in a very emotional period for my mom and myself just to go through this.
This year it's just like nothing on record. There's no words for 2020.
Words.
I just look forward to starting my first interview after the new year. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But just out of curiosity, I know that when you go door to door, actually, so I was a baby, or I lived as, for a couple of years just after being born on Lyman Ave. So technically, I've lived in your district. Yes, many years ago, but technically.
Yeah.
So I'm curious because I know that you're not going door to door and people are saying, oh man, I just can't get enough of this Green New Deal. So what else is out there that you're hearing from people either that you can identify with? And say, oh, heck yeah, I'm going to be a champion for this up in the Senate. And also, what are you hearing maybe from constituents that you go, okay, I didn't even realize that was something that people were looking at, if there's anything like that?
Well, I am so lucky to have this, to have had this extended period, even at the end of the at-home orders for COVID, that we went out with gloves and masks and hand sanitizers and very carefully started talking to people. So I feel really lucky that I've been up and down the district during the primary, thousands of homes. I've talked to thousands of people and learned about what makes them tick, what is of concern to them. And I feel definitely that I'm working for the Green New Deal, but the Green New Deal as it relates to working people, as it relates to everything that's happening in our society, our way we make power, our way we use power, how we employ people, the respect for different kinds of employment. There's so much within the Green New Deal that I don't even say Green New Deal to anyone. I don't need to, because we're talking about those ideals anyway. We're talking about how to, working families need to balance their healthcare costs, with their food costs, with their house costs, have affordable housing. There's so much that we talk about. But the biggest issue I've found on the doors in the last few months is our school system. That is, people have a lot of concerns about our schools and, of course, a lot of concern about getting back to school. So, but I've also, I mean, people have come up with solutions. There are solutions out there. People have ideas, and that's exciting to me. And I have noted all those ideas, and I've even gone back to a house or two and talked about those ideas because they're so worthwhile. And people have not felt listened to. They want to be a part of this process. They love the idea of being involved in their own government.
Right, and the prior office holder may or may not have addressed that the way that, a lot of voters would like. So I think that's probably why you're hearing them call out for that.
That's one of the reasons I decided to run, is that my state senator now has done a great job in many ways. But I don't think she was as accessible to the voters or the residents as she could have been. And that's important to me. And I think that's important to all our communities. So that is one of the reasons I did.
Yeah, again, I had nothing against your current senator. I think she might be better suited for what she's going to be doing in the future than what's going on in that right now. And I think that the biggest and most important thing that we can do, I realized this very much so after I left the GOP, is that our candidates on both sides need to be honest and straightforward. And everything I've read and everything I've heard speaking to you, you know, tells me that you're the person to do that. So we can disagree on topics, but I know that when Kendra Anderson says something, she means it. And that's really, sadly, very rare in politics. So, I think that's something to be said. Now, you talked about education in Warwick, and I have a bit of a unique point of view on this because I went through it. Now, again, you know, I graduated high school 2002, so we're going back a little bit. But at the time, I grew up, I was Holloman School for Elementary. Then I went to Aldrich for my seventh grade first year. And then we moved to the Greenwood area. And all of a sudden now I had eighth grade at Winman, and I had my high school education go through Tollgate, which in 2002, I got to say, I mean, it kind of felt like private school to some degree, especially with everything, the money and everything that comes in from the families in Coisa and whatnot. I look back now, and I would not be having this conversation with you if I had finished at Aldrich and Pilgrim at the time. I would not have. I didn't have the support did not feel there in that part of the city. And it's not an indictment on any one particular person, but I knew I was getting a boost by going to Tollgate. And so I'm just curious, here we are now 18 years out from that. What specifically, when it comes to making education services better in Warwick, would be your immediate task outside of physical infrastructure issues, because I know those exist. Some of the buildings are older. But as far as making sure students are ready to graduate, what would be your number one piece of legislation?
Well, we do have to look at the funding formula. I know that's not the answer to everything. Money is not the answer to everything. But we do have to look at the funding formula and make sure that that's benefiting each district equitably. Definitely that. I would like to sit down. I've started to talk to the school committee, but we haven't gotten into any kind of in-depth conversations. But I just want to learn far more about the district, the school district, before I make any recommendations. It's really talking about and learning as much as I can. That's sort of how I approach a lot of what I do, is just to do a lot of listening first. Find out what's going on, because otherwise you're not going to find out what you're going to work on first. And I also think that in Rhode Island, like they've done in Massachusetts. Let's have a comprehensive step-by-step plan and move towards improvements with a plan. I feel like we don't have that at this point in Rhode Island, but it's so doable. We have a small state with tons of talent, and we can get there. I know we can get our schools to a place of excellence.
I don't think there's any reason for Warwick to not be the number one school system in the state. I really don't. And I think that you can do that if you put your mind to it, and it sounds like you will. And that's great. Again, it's my hometown. So, you know, I, as removed as I am, I just, you know, I'm over the border by about a quarter mile, really, in Connecticut. But, you know, Warwick does mean a lot to me. All right. So I want to ask you a little bit about your candidacy specifically. You had a four-way primary for the Democratic nomination in your district, District 31 in Warwick. What was it like to run a campaign in a four-way primary in Rhode Island as a Democrat? Because that's generally mutually exclusive terminology. So I'd love to know, are there any anecdotes or stories, what was struggles or you know, wins? It's just so interesting to me, and I hope people are listening are wonky enough to like to know those things too. But yeah, let me know, let me know what that was like. I want to hear that.
It really was something. It was a surprise to me to have so many opponents. I had entered the race with only one, and there were a lot of winding turns, and one of them being COVID. That was difficult because if you're running against three other people, you've got to get your message out there. And we had planned mostly on canvassing and talking directly to voters. So we were sort of caught up short with that. What do we do now? And I suspended my campaign just for about 3 weeks to help, 3 or 4 weeks, to help people in the district deal with what was going on. And once we got back into it, we found that we could safely canvass and we could talk to people on the doors. But so were other candidates. So it was a wild ride to, I sometimes say it was like a game of whack-a-mole. I had one candidate, I'd know what was going on with them, and then, oops, two others came up, and then get one of those candidates and, you know, in my Periscope or whatever, and then two others came up. So it was that kind of thing where I just was looking from all sides, what are we doing now? Also, I had planned my finances for one candidate.
Right.
And now we had the onslaught of self-financed candidates. I mean, they had a lot of money, and they were sending out mailer after mailer and huge signs everywhere. And so now my campaign fund had to last or had to deal with three other candidates. So that was a surprise as well. We just kept going with our original plan, just kept talking to voters every night, every day. We went out every day canvassing and talking to voters. And we were the only campaign that did that. And it worked out in the end. But it was, I'd say, trial by fire, learn by fire. I had to learn everything about canvassing or campaigning in a pandemic and a campaign against three other opponents. So it was crazy.
It'll be a good chapter in your book someday for sure.
Yes. Yeah.
So I want to wrap up, and I want to ask you a question about your opponent, though. This is not a place to disparage opponents, and I'm not saying that you would. I'm saying that I'm going to ask you a question, actually, that is skirting that line. But I think it's an important question, and certainly anybody that we discuss on this show, no matter who I'm talking to, they're always welcome to come in and give their side of things. But I know you know this because I've seen you discuss it on Twitter. Your opponent recently ran, and you're probably more familiar with what the verbiage was the other day, but a tweet that made a sexist joke, I guess it would be, to imply that he did not enjoy washing dishes at that particular evening, and that he could, I think, close quote on this is, can understand why women don't like doing it. So that's, you know, really terrible in a lot of ways. I'm a loss. I'm at loss for words. Why would anyone do that?
Yeah, well, let me help you here.
Yes, definitely.
I know. Actually, the quote, I don't have it exactly, but the essence was, I can see why this is a woman's job, which is very different than
that's
I
different
can
from
see.
What I would
exactly why women yeah. don't like to do this. Yeah, who likes to wash the dishes, you know? But really, that was a very concerning comment, even as a joke. And I think what it brings up is that as leaders and as people who are shaping policy, we have to actually, I hope that everyone in their soul believes that things like that are not true. And then if you're joking about it, that's a problem as well, because you're broadcasting this to a very large audience. And who knows these days what you really are feeling? And you can't joke about something like that anymore. And it brings up, you know, questions of, to me, leadership suitability. But I don't know him very well. And in some ways, we even are in agreement on some things like transparent government, and a transparent budgeting process, but these social views are extremely important. We are going to work for everyone, no matter what their choices are in life, whether they're Republican or Democrat. We're running to represent everyone, and it upsets me to see that could, you know, be a joke.
I totally agree. It immediately brings to mind what my initial thoughts were on Brett Kavanaugh when he was put forward. And I know that seems like kind of a weird leap to get to that, but whether or not the allegations against him were true, is he really the only guy that or gal that's out there that could be a justice of the Supreme Court? Like, is there a Brett Kavanaugh out there without any allegations? Like, because that must be better, right? So it's not like we need to go, you know, pick it outside of your opponent's house. But, it could get to that extent. But even if it sits just as a joke, is there no other candidate on that side that can act like an adult? You know what I mean? Like, that's what I don't understand. And, I go back to the old Trump, you know, locker room talk type of thing. There is some truth to that. You know, it doesn't necessarily make it appropriate, but it does go on. At least it's behind closed doors. This is just right out there in social media.
Well, that's what upsets me.
I just don't get it. Is it ignorance or is there some deeper tactic that after all my years in politics, I'm somehow not seeing?
And what I don't want to see happen is to normalize, as we have seen over the last 3.5 years, that bad behavior and views that don't represent people are normalized. And that is what I think when we ask for jokes like that not to be part of our political discourse, we're saying, you know, that's not what we want to normalize. And that concerns me.
We'll have to see. It doesn't look like there's been much out of that camp other than kind of ignoring the attention over the last, you know, week or so. You've got the Warwick politics. You're replacing, a senator that's going to be joining the judiciary. The Senate is its own little club to begin with, so different than the General Assembly in the House. It's going to be fun. It's going to be interesting. I would love to talk to you after the race and see what this was all like in hindsight. But between now and then, you need two things. And I say this every week to my guests. You need money and you need people's time. And while there are quite a few people in this state that are well aware of your race, if there's anybody listening right now who just tuned in for the first time, who's this Kendra person? She sounds like she'd be a good senator. What is the best way for people to specifically, and don't be shy, how do we get you money and how do we get you time? Where should they reach out? What's the website? You know, let me know so that whoever's listening can head over there after they finish this podcast and get involved right away.
Well, I am on ActBlue. If you just search my name, Kendra Anderson, on ActBlue, you can access my campaign finance, giving page. And then if that is not comfortable and you want to find out a little more about me, you can go on www.KendraAndersonRI.com, and all my policy proposals and a little about me is on there, and you can donate from that site as well. I'm on social media, as you pointed out. I'm on Facebook, I'm on Twitter and Instagram.
That's you run the gamut. I think you're everywhere that, you know, people can find you. And you, by the way, I will say, when it comes to your Twitter, you are very active. You have, you know, personal anecdotes sometimes, you know, news stuff, political stuff. So I actually, you're worth a follow regardless of whether a listener would support you politically or not. I do think that. But it just sounds like you've had this, you know, crazy experience coming from the four-way primary. You're getting down to brass tacks and you got to fight the good fight here coming into November. And then, of course, you know, who knows what 2021 is going to be like, but certainly you'll be on the forefront. So I hope that you'll keep in touch with us and myself. I hope that we can have you back, hopefully for a victory conversation. But I just want to genuinely thank you so much for your time today. And, you know, best of luck with everything. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. This has been very fun. And, of course, I'll be back.
Awesome. I'm so happy to hear how it's going.
That was really a great interview. Thanks again for Kendra to come on the show. Was so happy to have you, and I really did enjoy that interview. Can't wait to see what happens with the general election. And I also want to take a moment to let any other candidates that are running this year know. And if you're elected official, or if you're just in general somebody who makes or creates news in Rhode Island, I would love to have you on the show. I'd love to talk to you about what's going on, what the future holds. This is a very tenuous time, not only in Rhode Island and New England, but also the entire country and the entire world. If you have a thought or want to speak to your cause, you can give us a call at 401-388-0684. Leave your information. We'll get back to you. You can also click on a link in the show's description that'll take you to a section where you can record a question or a comment based on a previous show, and we may use your audio and address your question in a future episode. You can also email me at rp@ringhousemedia.com. As you may know, October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Quite simply, no one should tolerate this in our society. If you are the victim of verbal, financial, physical, or sexual abuse, please don't stand for it. You can call the Rhode Island Coalition Against Domestic Violence. They have a 24-hour helpline. It's 1-800-494-8100. Again, the Rhode Island Coalition Against Domestic Violence has a 24-hour helpline at 1-800-494-8100. Please don't be afraid to call. Last night was the final presidential debate before the election day, just a couple weeks away. I have been quoted across the country as being a Biden supporter, so I don't think I'm going to blow anybody's mind by saying that. I would still try to be fair with, you know, Trump himself if he came on my show, let alone local Republicans. It's not all about him. I understand that. But I am a Biden guy, and what I saw last night really scared me, because Trump won that debate free and clear, almost without opposition. And when I went online to Twitter and social media to see if others had agreed with me, it became very apparent they had not. And that scares me, because it worries me about complacency, okay? And complacency in a electoral cycle like we're in, where the vote for president might be one of the most crucial and mold the future of any presidential race in the history of this country. And I don't think I'm just going out on a limb to get you excited. I really think that this is going to be the chunk of book reports for students in 50 years. I think it's going to be about Donald Trump, and I think it's going to be about coronavirus and everything else that we've been going through. But 20 years in politics at many different levels, I saw Donald Trump win that handily last night. As a matter of fact, at one point I was kind of just not paying attention, and I realized for a moment I was actually rooting for him and something he had started to say. And then I realized, no, this person has, you know, single-handedly brought down some of the most important things in this country that we hold dear. He's shown that he can lead with impunity, and that he can say or do whatever he wants to other people without consequence. And that reign of error, we'll call it, really does need to come to an end in November. This is a clarion call for anybody else who is in my mindset, a Biden supporter, maybe a new Biden supporter, new to voting for a Democrat. You need to get out there and vote, and you need to send in your mail ballots. People in general, a lot of people will call them low information voters. It's not the best term, but it's true. We'll make a decision preemptively. We'll make a decision based on just last night's debate. And what we need to do, because if you're listening to this podcast, frankly, you're probably involved in politics in one way or another right now. It's still early on for this show. You need to get out there and talk to the members of your community and your constituents and let them know, not only as important as it is for them to vote for you, but just to physically get out there and exercise that right. There just hasn't been a more important time. And I don't want to sound like a broken record, so I'll leave it at that. But please just remember that in 2020, the most important thing you can do for your country, besides take safety measures against the pandemic, is to vote this election for the candidate that you believe can take this country into the future and out of this terrible and frankly scary rut that we're in right now. Well, that was a great show. I want to thank my guest, Kendra Anderson, for being on. I want to thank all of you for continuing to listen to me through this platform. I'd love to get your feedback. You can reach me on Twitter at Robert Paquin. That's Paquin. But yes, it is time to end, which means we will hold all future business for further study. Until next time, folks, please stay safe and God bless.